So, hello everyone. Okay, the microphone works. That's good. It's a pleasure to be here. Talet, thanks for being here. We'll start our discussion by talking a bit about things that are happening right now on the ground in Israel, whether it's with regard to the settlement movement, things that are happening inside Israel in the democratic and legal aspects. And at the end, we'll talk a bit about what the fund is doing these days and all kinds of projects that are taking place. And we will have time to open it up for questions. And I assume there will be many of those. So let me start right off by asking you, Talia, a question that has to do with things that are happening today, but draws a bit on your experience when you were working as a legal advisor to the government in the days of Ariel Sharon. And at the time, you prepared a very famous, in Israel at least, very famous report about the illegal outposts in the West Bank and the expansion of the settlement movement. So this week, we had Jared Kushner visiting Israel, trying to get peace between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And as he arrived, there were two interesting and contradicting statements being made in the Israeli media. On the one hand, we saw Prime Minister Netanyahu write on his own Facebook page that his government, the current government, is the best government ever for settlements in the West Bank, in the history of Israel.
I agree.
And at the same time, we were hearing leaders of the settlement movement all over the place complaining that there is no building in the settlement, that Netanyahu is freezing the building de facto, some of them even calling to replace him, to take down his government and bring up a real right-wing leader. So we're hearing, on the one hand, the best government ever for settlements. On the other hand, a freeze and no building. What's going on here?
Well, every one of them is trying to promote its agenda. Let's assume that you are a settler and Jared Kushner is coming to Israel to talk about a deal, which means no settlements, right? What would you like to present to him? How come there is no settlements? We demand, we want more, right? On one hand. So this is for two reasons. One, to explain to this Kushner that our demand is to continue the settlement enterprise and don't think of getting any peace agreement. You could, of course, make any peace agreement you want, but the area remains ours. On the other hand, Netanyahu could show Trump that what kind of people he has in his coalition, that if there would be some pressure on the Israeli government, then the coalition would collapse. So he needs to give them something. What can he give them for the purpose to shut them down? More settlements. So now he declared that he's going to establish a new settlement in the West Bank, something that the government of Israel tried not to do. Let's say, not always succeeded, but they are trying not to to approve new settlements in the West Bank. So now is the right time to do that. He promised the settlers. Without having pressure on him, how can he get Trump to approve this new settlement? So they are doing their role, he is doing his role, and as long as there are more settlements, everything is settled.
So what you're saying is that this is some sort of internal political theater?
The whole thing is internal political theater. There is no foreign affairs policy. There isn't such a thing. That the whole thing is not, I don't think that there is somebody that, I'm sorry to disappoint you, I don't believe that there is somebody that is thinking what is the good for the interest of the State of Israel. The question is what is good for the survival of this government. This is the question. That's it. And this is the answer.
Now, when you were working on that report at the time for Prime Minister Sharon about the illegal outposts,
yeah.
about what's happening in the settlements,
yeah.
you look back at your work back then and you compare it to the situation that we have today, 2017, in the West Bank.
Yeah.
What has changed?
Not a lot. The only thing that was changed, I thought in the beginning that nothing was changed. And then I was corrected that it's not true. They didn't continue the phenomena of new outposts. After the report was published, they didn't continue the phenomena of building new outposts. I have to admit, yes, it didn't happen. But they didn't stop the building in the West Bank. So they continue to build where the outposts were. And they are trying to turn, you know, the outposts are an illegal settlement under internal law of Israel. Because if you're looking at the whole phenomena by the international law, so the majority of the world believes, including the United States, that it is illegal whatever it is, every settlement, every outpost. But under Israeli law, the outposts are illegal under the internal law of Israel. So they're trying to turn those outposts into a so-called legal under internal law of Israel. They can do a part of it, and a part of it they can't do. So what they did lately, a few months ago, the expropriation law, I don't know how you call that, the expropriation.
The law that basically is making the outposts legal, you know.
So-called legal. Yeah. So yeah. The main problem that they have, that why they couldn't make it legalize those outposts, because many of them were located on private Palestinian land. Now, they legislate a law that private Palestinian land is ours too. That's all. Now, everything. You could legalize everything. Everything.
And that's when the Supreme Court intervened.
We don't know yet. There is an appeal. I don't know what will happen with that. I can't imagine that they will approve this law, but, you know, I couldn't imagine many things.
And, you know, we don't know yet what the new administration here in Washington really wants to do on the peace process and the settlements. You know, we are hearing all kinds of conflicting reports and intentions, and Kushner is going back and forth and Greenblatt, but from your experience, if there's one advice that you would give them on the issue of settlements and how to deal with this specific issue, what would it be?
Well, if they were looking for my advice.
Who knows? Maybe the White House is watching us right now.
That might be. I trust them. They are. Well, what I would recommend them. Look, I think that it's extremely important for the world to understand, not only Jewish communities, everybody, Israelis and others. I'm an Israeli patriotic. I love my state exactly after my family. But to be a patriot of the state of Israel, you can't put into that definition the power to negate from Palestinians their right for a state of their own. Now, I want to tell you something. Ben-Gurion, he was an Israeli patriotic. He loved the state of Israel. He worked for the state of Israel. Nobody doubts that. What he decided on 48, he decided about the partition plan that the United Nations approved, 181 resolution of the United Nations. This resolution, although I'm not saying that the borders that this resolution accepted, those are the borders of the state of Israel. Nobody is talking about that. All the world is talking about the 67 borders. But the idea of partition, this is the principle. The idea of partition, you can't have it all. I think every one of you, an adult,
knows and understands you can't have it all. Everything you want, you have it. You can't. This is not the world. Now, there is a place, there is a land, there is people that are living there for decades and decades and decades. The land wasn't empty when we Israelis, the Jewish people, decided to build our state there. And we were right. And we had the right. And this right was recognized by the United Nations. But what right was recognized? The right to have a part of the place, not all of it. Because if you take it all, then the other people don't have it. So you are relying upon the idea that they started a war, then you occupied the whole area, then it's ours. And of course, God gave it to us, so there's no debate about that. So it's ours. It's not ours. And you can't take the rights of a people to have their basic right for self-determination. You can't take it from them. Look, you know what the Germans did in the Second World War. Can you remind me of some people who did something worse than this? Did someone said ever that they lost their right for self-determination for the German people? So what are we talking about? And this is from the Palestinian point of view. And what about us? For us, it's a disaster. We want for us a disaster, not less. We're losing the state. We're losing. Because our state was based on democracy, on the two main principles, the homeland of the Jewish people and a democratic state. If we lose democracy, we lose the legitimacy of the world, of the homeland of the Jewish state. We have to understand that. And the only way that we could remain a respectful state in the world is to have a part of the land, not all of it. That's it. That's the whole story.
And when you... And when you talk about, and this is the last question I'll ask about this part of our debate, because we have many other issues to talk about, but when you talk about the issue of self-determination, so Netanyahu comes and says, well, the Palestinians need to accept our self-determination as well, you know, accept Israel as a Jewish state. This is the condition. So what is your answer to that?
I agree to that, but not as a precondition, as the last condition of the negotiation. Look, I'm talking with Palestinians, and there, I don't know if you've heard of the Geneva Accord. Maybe part of you knows about that. In 2003, there's an Israelis and Palestinian launched an alternative peace agreement between Israelis and Palestinians. And all the core issues were covered. All of it was written. Every negotiation, formal negotiation, after 2003 was based on this, and this was based on the Clinton parameters. So how the agreement is going to be looked like, everybody knows. We know. And Netanyahu knows. Exactly. Now, if he puts a precondition of recognizing the state of Israel as a Jewish state, what does it mean? What a Jewish state? What is it? Is it a religious state? What about the Arabs? 20% of Israelis, 1.8 million Palestinian citizens of Israel. What is this Jewishness to do with them? Is this a religious state of the Jewish people? It's not theirs. This is what the right-wing people want now to legislate the law about the nation state. This state belongs only to us Jews. What about them? What does it mean to be a citizen of this state, of this, the only democracy in the Middle East? Being a democracy, a type of a Middle East, not a democracy.
Well, so we could go on probably to talk about the core issues of the conflict for hours, but there are, you know, and I think I'll bet that, you know, if we'll have this discussion another year, we could still bring them on, unless Jared Kushner pulls off the most amazing peace agreement ever. But I do want to ask you about other things as well, because while we are debating these questions, some would say the endless pursuit of the agreement, a lot of things are also happening inside Israel that I'm sure you have a lot to say about. And I'll start by asking you about the breaking news of today, of this morning in Israel, when we heard that the spokesperson for Breaking the Silence, an organization of former IDF soldiers and officers who are testifying against the occupation, has been asked by the police to come for questioning because he basically testified about using a very harsh violence against an innocent Palestinian. How do you view this development from today?
Well, what to say? First of all, the whole idea that that person admitted that this is what he did, and therefore he's a part of this organization, and he approaches to the government of Israel to stop the occupation because it's not he is not the one who did it. It's a phenomena that he was ready to admit that he was a part of it, but everybody is doing that. Now they caught him and want to charge him. And who wants to charge him? The minister of Ministry of Justice. She wrote a letter to the Attorney General and said, you have to find if it's true, and if it's true, you have to charge him. So there are so many things to say about that. I don't know where to start with. First of all, I don't know. How come that a minister is involving with an investigation? This is something I can't accept. Once when I was a prosecutor, you know that I was one of the senior prosecutors in Israel. I even was the head of the investigation against the first criminal case against Netanyahu. But they didn't accept my opinion. But anyhow, I got once a telephone call from one of the ministers that used to be, not now anymore, and he wanted me to do something about some investigation. I said to him, I don't understand. First, how come that you know my telephone, my cell phone? Second, why, if you know my number, how come that you are calling me? Third, I don't know what you're talking about. I can't talk with you about any investigation. You're not my boss. I owe you nothing. You're a minister in the government, and I'm very sorry. I can't talk with you about that even. Right? So this is what I'm thinking, really. Not to be so brave. I think this is what should be done. How come that that minister wrote to the Attorney General what to do in a specific case? I can't get it. This is one thing. This is not the worst.
Your story, a bit of a James Comey story right there, somewhat. But then, you know, as to the aspect of, you know, the event itself, and because a lot of the critics of Breaking the Silence and of NAF will come and say, well, look, you know, this is, you guys are supposed to be against violence, so how come, you know?
She's waiting for us to say that, exactly. But what I would say, first of all, where were you until today? So it's a matter of a few years. Why did you wake up today? What happened that you started the investigation? But this is not the issue. The issue is that you have to ask yourself, if that minister, her aim is to bring more justice and enforcing of the law, would it be the result of her interference now or not? Because if you're going to charge that person and you're going to send him to jail, do you think that there will be a second one who will declare about phenomena of hitting Palestinians after him, or not? So the whole thing is to bring people to shut their mouth and not to speak about what they see, because she wants the occupation to continue and continue, and she knows exactly what is the price. And she wants us to pay the price. That's it. She doesn't mind as long as we hold the area.
So basically your concern is that if someone is being, you know, put on trial for testifying about things they did during the military service, no people will be willing to testify in the future?
I am sure that this president won't bring more people to give testimonies about what happened. He's an that guy is an ideological warrior. He wants to put it on the public sphere.
He's the kind of person who would pay the price.
He's ready to pay the price, I'm sure. But you know that this organization is attacked daily by the government. Our organization is attacked by Bibi Netanyahu, I think, the last month, 4 times.
Especially
against NIF.
Yeah, he usually likes to do something interesting, which is to link you guys with Naftali Bennett. Whenever Naftali Bennett, who is the Minister of Education and who is to the right of Netanyahu, attacks Netanyahu over something, not being enough right-wing, Netanyahu has this kind of, it's like a copy-paste kind of thing that, you know, Bennett did something with NIF. I don't remember what it was.
Oh, the last time that I was involved with it was a week ago in the Aretz conference. You know that Bennett, he boycotted the Aretz conference in last years. He said he is not ready to come to talk when NIF is one of the sponsors of the conference. This year, he accepted. And I said that when a politician does something good, you have to say that publicly. So I said it's very good that Bennett accepted to give his speech in a conference when NIF supported. He wasn't very happy, but we were.
It wasn't the blessing he was looking for. Maybe he wanted you guys to attack Haaretz for inviting him. But you know, but to go back to the subject, do you see an escalation in these kinds of attacks on organizations like NIF, like Breaking the Silence, and
well,
why?
Well, this is something that I could try to explain. I think that in Israel we have a delegitimization of the left for many years, since the Rabin assassination and before that. I think that people are afraid to declare we belong to the left. I think that one of the tools that Bibi Netanyahu use is how to create an enemy. Those people, they are bad people. They are against the state. They are traitors. They are not patriotic of the state of Israel. And this is the way he does to human rights organizations, since they are the only ones who remained to fight for our goals as democracy. You know that democracy became a matter in a debate. You believe in democracy, I believe so. But not all of the Israelis are believing in democracy, because this right-wing government tries to persuade the people that there is contradiction between Jewishness and democracy. What is the problem with democracy? We lived with democracy a few years, nothing happened bad to us. So why it became so risky for us, this democracy? Because democracy is based on equality. And equality, it means equal rights to Jews and Arabs. Oh, this we don't like. Arabs equal to Jews? No, no, no. Those who are ready to accept the Arabs as equal to us, they love the Arabs. If you love the Arab, you hate the Jews. So there is a contradiction between being a democratic state and a Jewish state. And therefore, when there is a contradiction between those two things, Jewishness and democracy, then we are for Jewishness. So there is a wind coming from the government against specific populations. And we are, as an organization, that demanding democracy, demanding equality, demanding integration of Palestinian citizens of Israel with Israelis, and demanding basic rights to everyone, then we became the enemy. That's it.
Now, I'll ask you a question that has to do with internal Israeli politics on the left, because some people on the left, like, you know, you would say even like the leader of the opposition, Herzog, their calculation in response to what you describe as delegitimization of the left is to come and say, we're going to take some distance from organizations like NIF. We're going to call you out. We're going to say that you are the ones hurting the left. You are the ones taking it too far to the extreme. What is your response to that kind of internal debate?
What is the extreme? Being a democratic, this is being on the extreme. So what is the mainstream? I really don't know. I don't understand that. I don't think I am one on the extreme. I think I am the mainstream of Israel. I hope. But for the right-wing people, it's good to put us under a definition of the bad guys. It's good for them. They think that it encourages their base when you have an enemy.
Someone to point
Herzog, out. Herzog. What to
you,
say
you
about
say
Herzog?
It. You can
tell me yourself.
He's,
I don't know.
He's running for re-election in the Labour primaries in 12 days.
I don't see his successes. And I can't support this way of behavior. Look, maybe because I'm not a politician exactly, I'm an ideological person, and I believe in principles. I can't leave my principles for other goals. So I believe in democracy, and I'm ready to fight for it. And I think that the one who abandoned those principles, maybe he didn't abandon, but he doesn't want to put them on the table publicly and openly. I don't think, you know, I think that it's even from a political point of view, it's a mistake.
Why?
I think that people understand that.
Well, that there's something being concealed, something
Look,
not being truthful.
There is a debate in Israel. You can't hide it. You can't hide it. There is a debate. There is one way that people are thinking, and this is a different way than people are thinking. You have it in the States. You know that. So you can't hide yourself and pretend as if you belong to them when you belong to them. They know it, and they know it where you belong to. And anyhow, even if you could really hide, I don't like it. I can't accept it as
a strategy, as a
way
to do politics.
Yes, and I think it's not working. But anyhow, if it's working or if it doesn't work, I'm not there.
And this is kind of, I think, in a way, you know, reminds people of the debates that are happening in the United States now among the opposition, or maybe I should call it the resistance, you know, all kinds of terms. And I do want to ask you, before we talk a bit about different things that NIF is doing these days in Israel, if you have felt any effect in Israel from the events that have been happening here for the last half year,
yeah,
the rise of President Trump, specifically on the issue we discussed in the last few minutes of, you know, civil
yes.
society and organizations. Where do you see it?
Well, this is a very important question. Look, President Obama was a human rights defender. This is from my point of view. This is what I have seen. And when the government of Israel started to, with this kind of legislation, what we call the anti-democratic legislation, he interfered from time to time. So many times it was quiet. You know, not you couldn't read the headlines in the news about that. But there was sometimes that it was he went public with it. For instance, about the law of the NGOs that Bibi Netanyahu legislated a softer law in the end of the day, that, you know, that some organization has to put a badge on their clothes when they are coming to the Knesset or wherever, and to declare about themselves that they are foreign agents of some foreign entities or states. When he decided, Bibi Netanyahu, to legislate this law, Samantha Powers came to Israel. I met with her, and some other organizations met with her, with Dan Shapiro. And she wanted to listen to us, the civil society, to hear what we have to say about this legislation. And she went the day after to speak with Bibi Netanyahu. I don't know what she spoke with him, but I know what Dan Shapiro said publicly in the radio about this law. And he said that in the United States it couldn't pass this law. And they had a huge argue with him if it could pass or not or whatever. So we had, on that time, when Obama was in a president, we had some policemen that was in the area. This policeman vanished. Now, who we have to defend our human rights? Trump?
Well, you know, it was interesting that we saw the German government last week kind of intensifying their position on the issue of the NGOs in Israel in light of the new legislation that Netanyahu says he wants to propose, that any foreign funding will be forbidden. So the German foreign ministry put out a statement saying that this is like China and Russia.
Yes, well, I support them with what they're doing. I don't know if you've heard about the visit of the Minister for Foreign Affairs of Germany visiting in Israel, meeting with some human rights organizations that Bibi Netanyahu prohibited him to meet with. And he said, if you're going to meet with him, I'm going to cancel the meeting with you. And he did it. I was in that meeting. And I met with the Minister for Foreign Affairs of Germany. And I appreciate very much what he did. I think it was a real backing for some organizations in Israel that are being, I don't know how to call that, that the government delegitimized those people. As sometimes I'm afraid, you know, that before Rabin was assassinated, people called him traitor. Called him traitor, and one day someone came with a gun and killed him. So why not to do that to those horrible people from Breaking the Silence or B'Tselem? Who's going to be responsible for that? You know, the deputy for Ministry for Foreign Affairs, Khotobeli, she said about Breaking the Silence a month ago, she said, this is the enemy of the inside. I don't know if I use the right word.
The internal enemy.
No, internal enemy from the inside. You know that the Nazis used to call their Jews in Germany. And the Nazis. And the Speaker of the Knesset, he said in the Independence Day from Har Herzl, you know, his speech is something that used to be uniting the whole populations in Israel. You know what he said? He said about the left, not all of them are traitors. Thank you very much.
Now, you know, you have become very affiliated with these kinds of organizations and with the work that NIF is doing on, you know, the, I would say, the toughest issues in the Israeli debate. Can you tell me a bit more about, you know, in the general outlook, what the fund is working on these days, you know, with this issue in mind and others as well?
You know that NIF, New Israel Fund, that was founded approximately 40 years ago, more or less, at the beginning, I think I wasn't there, of course, they thought how to build a civil society, and they dealt a lot with social justice and saw themselves as the whole activity of theirs is to promote civil society in Israel. A strong civil society, it means a strong democracy. In the last years, not 2 years or three, the last year, 6, 7 years, we're mainly dealing with democracy. We're seeing that we have to defend democracy in Israel. And it's more important than everything. So we used to take care, and we're doing that also today, taking care of whatever you want, women, gender, the gays, how you call that?
LGBT community.
LGBT, yeah. Refugees, people in the periphery, poor people, public housing in Israel, integration between Jews and Arabs, whatever, wherever you look. But our main force today is how to protect democracy in Israel, and we are dealing with this every day, and therefore we're so severely attacked. This is the reason.
And I have one more question before we open it up for the questions from the crowd. You know, one thing that I've heard as a kind of criticism is people say, well, you know, NIF is doing all these wonderful things, like you said, in public housing and with the LGBT community. Why don't you guys focus on that and, you know, cut ties to any kinds of controversial organizations, people, you know, like stuff that is more, you know, has to do with the occupation. What do you say about that?
Well, if we wanted to gain popularity, for sure we had to do that. But we are not there at all. As you see, we are ideological, stupid people. We believe in principles. So I think this is one of the most important things for us to do. I think that to stop the occupation, to bring Israel to a separation between Israel and Palestinian people, to focus on Israel's democracy and defend it. These are the most important things that should be done in Israel. Therefore, I am there. You know, I'm a volunteer. I could go from here and forget about NIF. But I'm doing that because I believe that this is the most important thing to do as an Israeli citizen, patriotic of the state of Israel, that is seeing that our state, we're going to lose it. And we can't allow ourselves. This is what I think. Anyhow, I can't. If I do that, then what about my family that came 100 years ago to this land of Israel to build a kibbutz, to build a state for the Jewish people? All of them are dead already. What about their enterprise? What about a Zionist enterprise? Is that something that you just could turn your back to and deal with yourself? Not me.
Well, on that, I don't know, optimistic or pessimistic note. We will now open it up for Q&A. I just want to emphasize, please ask questions. Do not answer the answers by yourself, all right? Specific, focused, and short questions, please. And we have a lady in the back. Yes.
Thank you very much for your comments. I feel the need to say that. What percentage of the Israeli citizenship feels the same way as you do? Because it is extremely dispiriting watching this from here, watching what's happening and having the same reactions, also worrying about our own country, but worrying about Israel. Thank you.
To answer or what?
You want to take a few and then...
Collecting a few questions?
If you can remember them, then yes. So we have another one in the back over there. Yeah. Oh, answer first, that's what we do? Okay, so, okay.
Well, I would say that it's very difficult to really to know how many Israelis holding my positions. A minority hold my positions publicly. Many of them are afraid. If you're going to ask somebody in the street, what is your view? How would you define yourself? So some of them would say, I'm on the right, and some would say, I'm in the center. But very little amount of people would say, I am a lefty. People don't want to be on the left, and they're right. There is a delegitimization of, of people on the left. And why should they? But I believe that if we'll have the right leader, I think you would be astonished to see what will come out of Israel. I think that many Israelis feel that something is wrong here. Many Israelis. They even don't know exactly what.
Yeah, we had a question over there in the back. And
Hi, my name is Netra Halperin with Peace Films, and I really appreciate everything you say, especially defending Breaking the Silence, because I think they're awesome. I was surprised the very last thing you said. You said defending my home, my family, all that enterprise, and then you said Zionism, because often the same people that believe what you say do not think Zionism is a good thing. So, yeah.
Well, thank you for the question. Yeah, it was wrong for me to say that here, since I know that in America, when you say Zionist, people think, oh, she supports the settlements. No, so I don't support the settlements. I believe in the old way of Zionism, as it was declared in the Declaration of Independence of the State of Israel. The State of Israel was founded on two main principles, being the homeland of the Jewish people, be open to every Jew in the world that wants to come to Israel, make aliyah, and be a citizen of Israel. I am for it. I am for Israel as a democratic state. I am not ready to accept Israel as a non-democratic state. These are the principles that I believe in. To that, I call being a Zionist. This is the Zionist movement, that this is the Declaration of Independence that came out of them. This was the beginning of the State of Israel, and these are the principles that the state was built on. Okay, now, I know that today there are people who said, oh, creating the settlement enterprise, this is Zionism, this is post-Zionism, this is bringing us to a dead end. This is the end of the Zionist movement.
Gentleman in the back. Yeah.
Yes, thank you. My name is James Warren. I'm not affiliated with anybody, so that gives me a certain freedom to say things others might not. I'm wondering what you would like from us in the United States. I wholeheartedly agree with almost everything that you've said here, but it's not a view and a set of opinions that's widely held over here or is really allowed to be discussed in many forums. You can say it here at the Middle East Institute in front of 100 people, but people do not get on television and get the chance to say the things that you are saying in this country. Nobody in Congress talks the language that you are talking. It is extremely difficult, and anybody who tries to say these things faces a wall of opposition from Israel's supporters here. The mainstream Jewish establishments and the Jewish organizations are very hostile to anyone who says the sort of things that you say, and they're not slow to call people anti-Semitic if they do it. So what would you like us to do to help you?
Thank you for the question. I know it's difficult, and it's a phenomenon all over the world in Jewish communities that I meet, wherever you want, the same phenomenon, and the same phenomenon in Israel. I think that, you know, I don't want to give you an example from the German government. But what they did just now was extremely important for us Israelis. Because people who love the State of Israel, and this is my love, don't question that. I think we should say the right thing to protect the state when the policy of the government is totally wrong. Now, I know that you're, I assume, a Jewish person who...
No, Christian.
A Christian, or whatever you are, sitting here in the States, and I know that it's difficult for you to come and say, well, I believe Israelis should do this and that, but I'm not a part of them. So people would say, well, you're not there. So how come that you have a say about what's happening there? I think that today we arrive to a place that it's so threatening of the existence of the State of Israel that everyone who loves the state should speak up, because we're losing this state. We're losing it. And therefore, you could say, look, I'm not saying that Israel should take part in some war, yes or no. Of course, I'm not a citizen. I'm not there. But being a democracy, this is the resolution of 181 from 48. This is the principle that the state was built on. This is what this state declares about itself since the minute that it was founded until this day. The only democracy in the Middle East. So what are we talking about? Democracy? How come that they're going to legislate a law to stop funding of NGOs that thinking differently from the policy of the government not to be funded by foreign countries? Why? This is, we know what kind of state does that. So why can't we speak up? Even here, why not? Why the German government can do that and people here can't do? And not to speak about the Jewish people, that Israel declares that we are the homeland of the Jewish people, we're a Jewish state, so what about us? Can't we say that we are going to lose the state if we'll do this and that and that? That the state of Israel said that we are a part of it. And when we are talking about the Palestinian-Israeli conflict, it's not an internal issue of Israel. This is an international conflict.
Over here, yes.
The great American philosopher Yogi Berra said it's difficult to predict, especially about the future. Nevertheless, I'll ask you, if you were to give this talk here 5 years from now, do you think you'll be saying the same things, or do you think there may be a substantive change?
I'm afraid to give you an answer. Not because I don't dare to predict the future, which I am don't dare to predict the future, but because I dare to predict the future this time. And I'm very much afraid what might happen in 5 years from now. I don't know. I hope we could sit the same as we do now, but I'm not sure.
There was, right over there, question. Here in the lane,
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to ask a question about the status of Israeli settlers in the West Bank. Netanyahu recently made a very controversial statement, which was, he said Palestinians want ethnic cleansing in the West Bank as a prerequisite for peace. And I thought that many people thought that this statement was extreme, but it did raise a question for some people about what should happen to the Israeli settlers who are currently in the West Bank in the future. Could they be part of a future Palestinian state, or should that entire situation sort of be re-examined? And I was just curious to sort of hear your thoughts about that.
Look, I think that to leave settlers in the West Bank under Palestinian Authority, it's a huge mistake, a huge one. And I think that Netanyahu understands that. This is what I believe. He never said that. But just imagine that there is a peace agreement between Israel and Palestine. Israel is removing the IDF back to Israel. Settlers are remaining where they are. And we are fine one night. The day after, maybe an extremist Palestinians might go to some settlement, there's no IDF anymore, and might kill the whole nursery, 20 kids dead, slaughter. What will happen? 24 hours after that, the IDF is back in the area. Or what would happen if extremist Israelis would do the same thing to Palestinians? And both of the extremists would like to blow up the agreement. Both of them. They don't want to have the agreement. Every one of them, because they want the whole land for themselves. And therefore, you can't leave it to those people. It's craziness. And therefore, you have to bring the people back. Why? Ariel Sharon left the people in Gaza Strip under a Palestinian authority. He ruined all the houses of 8,000 people and brought them back to Israel. You can't leave your people there. It's not, you know, maybe you're thinking of an agreement between two states in Europe, whatever, between the United States and Canada. It's not that. We're not there. Even there would be a peace agreement. It would take decades until a real relationship would be applied in the area.
Lady over there in the back.
In the United States, we realized that we've lost the political voice of the people by not taking care of running candidates on a local level and all the way up. Is there an initiative in Israel? Is there anybody who's trying to get young people to run for office, to get involved in politics? I've always felt that many of your best minds have left, and that that the people that are running for office, getting involved in the political world of Israel, are missing from a centrist or left or democratic point of view.
There is an attempt by NGO to prepare people for leadership. We give money for that. We fund it in a way. But if it might succeed, but if you ask me about leadership, it's something that a person, maybe he doesn't know that yet, but it's something that a person is born with and will have the drive because he believes that things should be changed and come out of the people. This is what I think. But maybe we could help by preparing people for leadership, but we're doing that.
Over here in the front.
My question concerns the recent book by Nathan Thrall, The Only Thing They Understand, which I have not yet read, but I saw an op-ed synopsis that he wrote, I believe, in the June 3rd New York Times. And I've also noticed that if you look for it on Amazon, it gets either a 5 or a 1. have either of you read it, and would you care to comment on it?
I didn't.
Let's move on to questions to Talia. I think it's a really fascinating book, but that's a wholly different discussion, so I apologize. But we have a question over here.
Yes. In terms of internal relations between Jews and Arabs, there has been initiatives by the Israeli government, I think it's 922, which involves equalizing spending between Arab towns and increasing education quality and things like that, which seems in contrast to some of the other things you spoke about. And I would be curious to hear your comments and thoughts about that.
Well, there was a plan that was approved by the government of Israel to give to the Palestinian citizens of Israel quite a big amount of money through a few years ahead of us for integration and for promoting education, whatever. Then there were ministers who tried to stop it and to avoid the government of doing that. So what I think that only a part of this plan was implemented. And anyhow, organizations that we fund, they were the ones who pushed the government to do that. But I'm not sure we succeeded. Anyhow, only partially, I think.
You said the plan is still going on and has certain momentum behind it?
I don't know. We're pushing that by Sikui, which is an organization that is dealing with it, with Jews and Arabs. And it's something that you never know with the government, because they decided to do that. And then some ministers try to avoid it. And then Bibi Netanyahu said, we will put a committee to deal with it. And then you didn't hear about that anymore. So, I don't know.
And question over here in the front. Yeah.
In contrast to the gentleman who spoke before, I think it's reasonable to say that here there are some people who are speaking up. The growth of J Street is one indication of the number of Congress people who are willing to be identified to some degree with concern for two states. And more recently, there are lots of signs of groups on the ground that no one is really seeing enough of yet. I think it would be useful, Talia, if you would say more specifically, not just about defending democracy, but about the kinds of groups like Sikui that are working now and what they're working on and how they are working to try to educate the population or protect democracy or whatever you want to call it.
Well, this is a lot of stuff to speak about, but I just could say, for instance, people are afraid to go to demonstrations. People from the left, they're afraid to go to demonstrations. So we're funding an organization that is giving legal advice to those people that are getting involved with the police because of going to those demonstrations. We are giving another organization the tools how to make photos and to have evidence of what happened in a demonstration to prove after that in court what happened there to protect those people who took part in the demonstrations. We're giving, another issue that we're dealing with. For instance, you know that there was a horrible thing that happened, that three Jewish people captured a Palestinian boy and burned him to death. After that, there were a lot of people in Israel that wanted to come to comfort the family. So NIF gave money for 5 buses, I think, to bring those people to this family, to sit with them, to speak to them that there are other Israelis, not this kind of. And I think it was a very good thing to do on that time. For instance, the demonstration against LGBT. Two years ago, that a girl was murdered in that demonstration in Jerusalem. And the year after that, we funded the organization of the demonstration. We brought people by buses to Jerusalem. There was a huge...
The Pride Parade, basically.
What?
The Pride Parade in Jerusalem.
The Pride Parade in Jerusalem. There was a huge demonstration there that we took part in that. We give money to another organization that is called Biyachad, that people, Jewish people and Arab people are standing together hand to hand to show that there is a common future for people in Israel, Jewish and Arab citizens. It was a big demonstration in Tel Aviv. We funded it. Well, a lot of things that I can't deal with all of them, but NIF is fund organizations that are relating to the Palestinians out of Israel, for instance, Yesh Din, B'Tselem, Breaking the Silence, Adala, things like that. And we fund organizations that, for instance, are dealing with women gender. How to give more equal status to women in Israel. And we quite succeeded, for instance, in buses. You remember that a few years ago. And we fighted it and brought people to the buses to defend those women, not to let them get to the back of the bus and things like that. And now in Israel, I think you could see some, it's not only connected only to NIF, but I just wanted to give you a little bit some hope. Don't get out from here with a feeling that it is a disaster. Because it is a disaster, but we are fighting it.
I just
wanted to say that, look, you could see a sign of resistance of the people, of large societies of people, that they are starting to feel that something is wrong here, is not good for them. For instance, about the media, that Bibi Netanyahu tried to ruin the media, and he didn't succeed totally. There is in academia that Bennett just said that he is going to apply in universities a ethical code that people won't be able to speak about politics. Now, the Association of Students, they announced him that the minute he would do that, they would burst a strike in all universities in Israel. There was an attempt in the Festival of Akko for against artists. How to call that?
They wanted to censor basically a play.
A play, yeah, the people appeared naked. So the actors canceled the whole festival. They didn't want to come. So there is, you could feel a kind of resistance that is coming, that you could see it now. I can't tell you that it would be a big movement. I don't know what will happen from that, but for me, it's encouraging.
Okay, I would love to give more questions. I know many of you wanted to, but I'm getting signals that we have to close. So thanks, everyone, for coming. Thank you, Talia.